How to Resolve Ethical Stalemates in Clinical Research. An article in the February 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics suggests such an approach, an ethical standard of behavioral equipoise to resolve such stalemates. A co-author of the article joins us on the Bioethics Channel. His name is Dr. Peter Ubel, and he comes to us from the Fuqua School of Business, the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. Dr. Ubel, what's the nature of the problem you're trying to address with this article?
Well, let me start by giving just the quickest history of this topic. Even 30, 40 years ago, researchers found themselves in stalemates when one set of doctors would say, this treatment A is better than B. Another group would say, treatment B is better than A. They couldn't agree on what the truth was and didn't think it was ethically appropriate to enroll patients in trials because those who believed A was better felt it would be wrong to put someone in a randomized trial where they might get B instead. And people who thought B was better felt the same way in reverse.
It sounds like a number of people are caught in the middle of this disagreement, patients, doctors, and researchers.
Completely caught in the middle. Not sure about which treatment was better, if either one, and not able to find a way to agree on getting a trial started so they could get the answer to the question. Then a guy named Benjamin Friedman wrote an article in the New England Journal and introduced an idea he called clinical equipoise. Equipoise means you're kind of at a stage where you don't know what's right or wrong. And he said, look, an individual clinician might think they know what's best, but if the community of clinicians doesn't know what's best, and not good evidence to point them to what is best, then it's morally okay to put your patient in a trial. Kind of chill out and don't worry about the ethics because the data is important. And that really convinced a lot of people. And so since then, this idea of clinical equipoise has been a big influence in deciding when it's ethically okay to put your patient in a randomized trial.
Now you're suggesting that a new ethical standard be established?
Well, yeah, what we're saying is that clinical equipoise works to a point, and then you reach new stalemates. I'll give you an example. There's a medicine called TTA. It's a clot dissolver. It's been used for heart attack treatments for quite a while. People kept trying to use it in stroke patients. But with stroke patients, you have a very small window of time before it's too late to really dissolve it from getting worse. So when they tried TPA in some trials, patients didn't do any better, and in fact, they had some bad side effects from the drug. People didn't use it much. Then a group of neurologists, stroke doctors, decided, look, we need to just give this to patients who are like 3 hours or less into their symptoms. When they come to the emergency room, if we know that it's less than 3 hours, try the clot dissolver. They ran a randomized trial, and at the end of the day, they found out those people who got the drug had smaller strokes. Great. We had clinical equipoise at the beginning. Now when we have the answer, we know what's right. End of the story, except for one problem. Emergency medicine doctors hate using this stuff. They just don't feel like one trial is enough to prove that it really works. Plus, the medicine has bad side effects. They don't like to cause side effects in their own patients. It's about strokes, and they're not neurologists. They're medicine physicians. They're not comfortable treating strokes. And yet, they're the ones who are there in the emergency room when the patients present. So you have clinical evidence. The randomized trial evidence says TPA is the best way to go, and you have a bunch of doctors saying, I'm not really convinced. They won't do it. So maybe they need another trial. Give them further evidence that this stuff works. But no neurologist is going to let that trial happen because they're going to say the evidence already exists, that we're not at that stage of clinical equipoise.
So it sounds like you have people trying to do the right thing, but from different perspectives. In this case, stroke doctors and ER physicians.
They're convinced about it in different degrees, and they have different emotional reactions to the evidence. Sometimes these doctors can't even rationally defend the way they're using this evidence, and the fact that they're resistant and reluctant to use this new medicine is not necessarily a rational weighing of evidence. It's really just a gut reaction saying, I'm not comfortable doing it. Now, you can try to overcome this kind of clinical resistance to evidence by lobbying, by getting pharmaceutical companies in there talking to them, by having the hospital quality care board put pressure on them. But, you know, people have tried these kinds of efforts, haven't really made much headway. Sometimes, and this is what we're trying to write about in this article, sometimes we think the resistance to these things is behavioral, not just simply a matter of of not bringing in evidence. They just did the behavioral response to the evidence. And meaning another trial that would overcome the sources of behavior resistance to the therapy.
If I understand it correctly, then, this new standard you're suggesting may align science with the behaviors and beliefs of the clinicians involved.
That's right. There's a ton of evidence that shows that people are slow to change their beliefs, to take one belief and revise it. And yet we have this moral idea that definitive trial has been done. Then the scientific question has been answered, and there's no ethical justification for another trial. Just think that there are still times where results are perfectly justified because behavior is not going to change in the face of just a single trial.
In your article, you talk about some of the potential criticisms of behavioral equipoise, including a concern about patient harm.
Sure. So some people will say, if you ran a second trial now comparing TPA to no TPA, half the patients are going to go without the clot-dissolving drug and are going to suffer accordingly. That's unethical. Our response to that is, right now, most of the patients strokes getting TPA because the emergency medicine doctors aren't giving it to them. So if you just look at the small number of people who are in the trial, maybe you could say that we ought to know better than to let half of them go without TPA, but we're addressing a bigger problem of the thousands of patients going without TPA, and the trial is designed to see if it really does work as well as that first trial suggested, and if that further evidence might therefore get more doctors to use the medicine appropriately.
Another potential criticism, the distinction between belief and action.
Yeah, you can believe something and not act upon that belief. And, you know, that gets to be a subtle distinction, probably too subtle for my simple mind. But the real bottom line here is it immoral to conduct another trial of a treatment that has proven at least in what seems to be the definitive trial to work, but that's not being used in the real world? And our view is, yes, another trial is justifiable. Now the question is, does the old standard of clinical equipoise, is that strong enough to justify another trial? Perhaps you could just say that emergency medicine physicians aren't convinced yet, so there still is community uncertainty about whether the drug works or not. I'm fine to say that this is just another example of that clinical equipoise, but most more important is we just need to recognize that the sources of people's reluctance to use medicines or reluctance to denote to use scientific evidence isn't simply that the evidence isn't strong, that there's sometimes other sources of resistance, and that the belief may not be strong enough to lead to action. And so we might need more information to push that belief to action.
This sounds like a pretty fine balance you're trying to strike.
Oh yeah, so I'm a pretty rational guy, or I strive to be. I try as a clinician to practice evidence-based medicine, but I'm also a behavioral scientist, and I know pretty well that information doesn't necessarily lead people to make rational decisions. And so when we think about ethical decisions we have to make, we need to take account of those beliefs, those behaviors.
What would a research world look like if this new standard of behavioral equipoise were embraced?
I think, first off, we would opening up debate about stalemates and start trying to deal with them a little more aggressively. And we decide, because I think people would still be nervous about running a new trial. Sticking with this TPA example, I think a lot of people would be nervous about having another randomized trial. But if they look at the standard behavioral equipoise, now they realize that there's still another moral justification for conducting a trial. But they first have to do a few things. First off, has there been enough effort just to convince people that the current evidence is strong enough to guide their action? And if there hasn't been, maybe it's not time for a trial. Maybe we need to do better PR work. Second, if you've made good efforts and you still haven't changed action, what kind of evidence would actually change behavior if the trial once again came out looking strong for TPA? And then I think you'll need to have a little creative work to design the trial to involve the right kind of investigators in conducting the trial, at the right kind of hospitals and community centers, etc., so that the evidence that comes out of that trial will be more believable to the people who are ultimately going to make the decisions in the future.
Dr. Peter Ubel of Duke University is co-author of an article entitled Behavioral Equipoise, A Way to Resolve Ethical Stalemates in Clinical Research. It appears in the February 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.